Let me get. Okay, great. Well, good morning, everyone. And I am calling to order the executive committee meeting. I'm Terry Hollingsworth, chair of the Orange County Workforce Development Board. Why don't we begin with the Pledge of Allegiance? Right hand over your heart, ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, great. Board member roll call.
Terry Hollingsworth.
Present.
John Luker.
Present.
Annalisa Lukes. And Barbara Mason.
Present.
And we do have quorum, Chair.
Okay, anyone for public comment?
We did not receive any requests to speak in advance. If there are members of the public that would like to address the committee, please use the hand raise icon or press *9 and I will unmute you. Seeing no hands, Chair.
Great, thank you. Moving on to the action items, we have two. We'll begin with the Orange County Workforce Development Board Work Experience Policy. And Karma?
Good morning, everyone. So this policy was taken in front of the Youth Committee. There are two work experience policies. Let's start there. So there's a work experience policy that primarily supports youth that are enrolled in our program. As you may recall, no less than 30% of our workforce dollars has to be spent on youth work experience. And that's where we provide youth the opportunity to work for an employer that they couldn't get on their own. So these are jobs that we incentivize the employer by paying the wages for the participant to allow our youth to have the opportunity to get exposure to skills with their organization. We recently decided to make some corrections, or not corrections, but updates to our work experience policy. We'll start on page 23. So as you can see, some of the corrections are just kind of updating. Scroll down a little bit, like the California Education Code, updating the education code. If you scroll down, the next update would be on page 26, where we clear up that the work experience is done through us. So in the past, we used to allow our service providers to go out and create the work experiences. And oftentimes there were things that weren't done to maintain compliance, meaning that when we create a work experience, we're supposed to go out and evaluate the work site, make sure that it is a safe working conditions and that they have all the legal requirements in place to become a work to be a work experience. In addition to that, there's a requirement to make sure it's a legitimate work experience. Let's just call it that. So for example, I wouldn't go to McDonald's and create a work experience at McDonald's. Those are jobs that kids can get on their own, right? And so what we found with some of our service providers, they struggle with identifying appropriate work experience sites, but then also doing the proper review of that facility. So we decided to take it in-house. And so what happens is our business services rep right now is Elizabeth, and Maggie and Jacqueline go out to the work experience sites to make sure that they are in good order, make sure that they have the fire extinguishers, that it's safe working conditions, and that it's not a work environment that is illegal. So for example, youth under the are 14, under the age of 16 are not allowed to work in certain environments, right? So we want to make sure that they're working in appropriate work environments. So they're going out to actually do that. So you'll see the update where we used to allow the service provider to do it. Now we're doing it in-house to ensure compliance with the law, but then also to ensure that the work site is appropriate. In addition to that, we want our service providers to really focus on serving participants versus trying to create work sites. So we decided to let them focus on enrolling participants, serving participants. We'll develop the work sites as we believe that maybe this freeing that up from them, that they'll have more resources put out to actually serving kids. I hope that makes sense. But essentially some of the changes you'll see is where we took out the service providers, we brought it in-house, so that they can maintain focus on serving participants. So a lot of the edits that you'll see here is where we rename or we take it from the service providers and bring it in-house. One of the notable changes that we did is we increased the amount of work experience dollars. So instead of 5,500, we took it to 6,200. Most cases, kids were making minimum wage, And a lot of these work experiences, they were doing jobs that were above minimum wage. So it didn't make sense for us to be paying you minimum wage to do a job or to work in an environment where you should be paid more than that. And so this also incentivizes the employers to pay more than that if they decide to hire the participant on, that they're not hiring them on, still paying the minimum wage, that we have the expectation of them paying them a little higher than that. Mm-hmm. Another thing I want to point out about the work experience, our desire is that when we place the kid at a work experience, that we hope that the employer hires them on. So that's another part of why we do this and why we brought it in-house, because we really want to encourage the employer to not just be a site for kids, but to actually become the employer for that child, or for that youth, excuse me. Mm-hmm. So some of the changes you'll see in here are just updating our processes and who's responsible for what. Are there any questions? I know this already went in front of the youth committee. Like I said, some of the things that I wanted to highlight is the dollar amount. So we took it to $17 an hour versus 15, as we realized that, like I said, a lot of the work experience opportunities were in roles that should be paying more than minimum wage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in terms of the WIP taking on the responsibility for going out to the work sites to ensure that they are in compliance, is that standard practice, you think, with other workforce development boards, or does it vary?
That's a good question. It does vary. However, most of the workforce boards are taking business services in-house just like we are. So if you look at San Diego, you look at LA, you look at other workforce systems, they found that it's probably better business practice to do work experience in-house than to put it out to a service provider, because here's what happens. When that service provider leaves, that relationship with that employer leaves with them. So you're starting all over again every time you get a new service provider. And as you know, we are required to procure service providers frequently. So that's a reason why workforce systems are across not just California, but the US are bringing in business services in-house because of that, because we are responsible for engagement with the employer. We're responsible for the relationship built with the employer. And it's really hard to manage that relationship if we are outsourcing it to somebody else.
Right. Okay, thank you. Any other questions regarding this policy?
No other questions. I mean, I chair the youth committee, so I'll make a motion to approve as we review this as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Great. Second it?
Barbara will second.
Mm-hmm. I'll go ahead and take the roll call vote. Terry Hollingsworth?
Approved.
John Luker?
Approved.
And Melissa Lutz is absent. Barbara Mason?
Approved.
And that is majority chair.
Great. Thank you. All right. So next, I think that takes care of that particular policy. Next, we have the, the Orange County Supportive Services Policy.
So you may recall the last board meeting, we actually approved this policy. However, there were some errors in some of the language and it needed to be corrected because it would have put us in a position of not being compliant. So the one-stop committee reviewed the updates to this policy and has now pushed it up or made a recommendation to bring it in front of the executive committee. Let's start on page 52. So starting on page 52, can you scroll down a little bit? So as you can see, one of the corrections is the quote of the CFR. So the link that it was dropped off. So we needed to add it back where you can find it in the CFR. So that's one correction that was made. And if you scroll down to page 54, this language was taken out and I needed to add it back because it is not an entitlement program. We have to be very clear where the money comes from. This language is necessary. And so we added it back. Let's see. And then the last update is on page 57. There was misquotes in there. So one of the misquotes is that once a person exceeded the cap for supportive services, that they had to come back if they wanted more than the $6,000, they had to come back and provide financial documents. That's not true. In fact, financial documents are not required for supportive services. Once you're enrolled in WIOA, if you are eligible for WIOA services and you're eligible for supportive services, I don't need to go back and look at your family income size. In fact, that's another requirement that's unnecessary. So we took it out. So there was that language was added. We removed it from it because number one, it would put us not in compliance with the law because the law doesn't require that we go back and look at your family household size or your income. In addition to that, it is not required to be leveraged. So we removed the language that's incorrect and just updated the language that is required. And so those are the updates to that policy. Basically, it's corrections.
It was cleanup, editing cleanup.
Yeah. Correct.
So what's the process of these policies? Once it goes through the committees, the workforce committees, does it go to legal counsel for review just to make sure that it, how does that process work?
So usually I write a policy and then I send it up to the state EDD and have EDD approve it. So county council is not going to be familiar with WIOA law. So I wouldn't send it to Orange County's county council. Okay. I typically send the policies to EDD's council. In this situation, one of my staff members decided to add things that I didn't see. And it wasn't until I got into the board meeting that I realized that they added extra things that would create a problem for us. So it wasn't the version that I saw and I approved was not the version that was presented to the committees, but I wasn't here for the first committee where it was presented. Mm-hmm. And so since it passed, I had to go back and fix it.
Oh, okay. Got it.
But essentially, all the policies I take to EDD and have EDD sign up on my policies. That's usually my process.
Okay. So this is basically cleanup and, attempting to make the changes to comply with the law.
Correct. So the original policy was approved by EDD.
Okay.
So it's more a procedural cleanup.
Procedural.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, it's language. It's language that shouldn't be there.
It's more clarifying.
Correct.
Making it more precise.
And correct.
All right.
But no major substantive changes.
No, the only major change we had is when we increased it to $6,000, which is what was supposed to be presented to you in the first place. But then exactly. There's extra language about like creating more barriers for people accessing it, and we can't do that.
So again, it's making it more accurate.
Correct.
Right. Okay. All right. Do we have a motion to approve this policy?
Yes. Mason will make a motion.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay.
Roll call vote. Terry Hollingsworth.
Approved.
John Luker.
Approved.
And Alisa Lukes is absent. Barbara Mason.
Approved.
And that is majority chair.
Right. Thank you. All right. Moving on to the next action item, youth program special initiative.
So if we could go to page 59. So I'm gonna take two steps back. So as a reminder, this board is not an advisory board, it's an acting board, right? And so as being an acting board, the board members are supposed to set the tone for programs and program delivery and services that we provide to the community. Almost a year ago, we started exploring cost plus performance contracts. Like, what would that look like? How do you do a cost plus performance or performance-based contracts? And in that process, we went through this series of conversations with the youth committee. We decided that we wanted to start off with the youth committee. But with the youth committee, we went through a process of trying to determine what group should we try this on, because we know that we can't create a paper performance contract or a cost plus performance contract with our full youth program, or perhaps maybe we can do one with a specific population. So over the series of meetings, the youth committee evaluated the different populations in Orange County and which population makes sense to try to do a pilot program that has a pay for performance arm. And so as a result of that, there's a recommendation made that we'll need the executive committee and the full board to agree to, but we're looking at doing a pilot program for youth with disabilities in Orange County. Of course, we have to get approval from DOL and the state, because you cannot do a performance-based contract without getting DOL and EDD's approval first, because they've got to agree to the performance metrics and like how you're paying them and the method of paying them, because depending on how you do it, it may cross over program years. In addition to that, it may be a challenge for service providers, right? And the participants when you do that. So we want to make sure that, number one, that this board agrees with moving forward with us getting approval from DOL and EDD to do it. But then we're also seeking approval. It's not quite written the way I would have wrote it. Exploring possibility of a pilot cost reimbursement plus performance-based contracts, special programs. So they did two. So they did one with just a special program. So they're asking you for permission to do just a special program for disabilities, number one. And then action number two is getting approval from DOL to do a cost reimbursement plus performance. So it's where I pay for the basic cost, but if you perform certain metrics, then you'll get a bonus payment, so to speak, like a performance-based payment. And so that's the recommendation is two things, doing a program for youth with disabilities, number one, and then number two, entering into a contract that has basic cost cover, but then performance metrics if they deliver.
I'm just wondering if the language exploring the possibilities is tripping up.
It did trip me up. You already explored it.
Yeah.
Now you're asking me to go, now I'm asking you for permission to go do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Could we recommend revising this language a bit to make it more direct?
Before we revise, let me make sure I'm actually saying it right. So in theory, okay. I can't do anything unless DOL and EDD says yes, right? So right. I guess it is still technically exploring.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I can't, unless they approve what we go after, if we write up something, they say, no, Karma, we don't agree with that. We don't like your performance metrics. You can't move on, right? So let's see. Approve moving forward with exploring the opportunity to develop. I'll leave it to you guys to tell me.
The pilot is based on approval from the DOL, right?
Correct.
I'm just not sure that it needs exploring the possibility. Approval to pilot. We're looking for approval to pilot a cost reimbursement plus performance-based contract I think that could use some finessing a bit.
What if we say, number one, approve moving forward with requesting a special program to serve you with disabilities? Approve moving forward with requesting approval from DOL and EDD to move forward with, yes, I think that might be it because I'm not exploring it. I'm asking for permission to do it.
Right. Yeah. So in concept, I think I'm in approval with the modification of the language to be more direct, and accurately reflect, the wishes of the committee.
Okay, I think I have. So action number one, I'm going to change it to say approved moving forward with requesting permission from EDD and DOL to develop a special program to serve youth with disabilities in Orange County. Okay. And then number two, approve approve the development of a pilot cost reimbursement plus performance based contract for special initiative contingent on the approval from DOL or EDD and DOL. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's more accurate of what we're actually doing.
Okay.
Is
everyone in agreement with that? I think that's more direct.
That sounds better.
Yeah.
I think it's more
precise. Yeah. That's fine.
Okay. Right. Okay. So okay. I will rewrite that to reflect what I just said.
Okay. And just for clarification, the second item says cost reimbursement plus performance-based contract. So is it, do the two not typically go, are they not typically grouped together? Does a performance-based contract imply cost reimbursement? Is it necessary to mention both?
It is. Because right now, all of your service providers have cost reimbursement contracts. Everybody has that right now. So, well, except for America Works. America Works has a cost reimbursement plus performance. So they're an example of what we're about to ask DOL for. But everyone else, so like the youth provider currently has a cost reimbursement contract because that's what the law says that we make available to service providers unless we ask for permission to put performance contracts in place.
Okay.
Got it. And the reason why it's broken up into two, because it's two different things. So one, we're asking money to set aside we owe money to serve only individuals. And then two, to do cost reimbursement contract for that population. So that's why it's two items.
Okay. Got it. All right. So do we have a motion to approve this policy or this request, this recommendation, with the modification that Karma just presented to us?
I'll make a motion to approve with the modifications to the action item.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Mason will second.
Okay.
Roll call vote, Terry Hollingsworth.
Approved.
John Luker.
Approved.
Annalisa Lukes is absent. Barbara Mason.
Approved.
And that is majority chair.
Thank you. All right. Let's see. Let me go back to the agenda. So that completes the action items. Moving on to the information items. Business Services Committee Chair updates.
Since Annalisa isn't here, I'll try to step in. Essentially, we reviewed some of the most recent business solutions events. As you well know, we've been short staffed. So we haven't been able to do the full function of business services. We are currently interviewing candidates for the position. We believe we've identified some candidates and working with county HR to offer the positions, or offer the opportunity for employment, let's call it that. So those are kind of some of the updates that committee would have talked about. We did host a job fair for veterans located in Soka University, which went really well. It was well attended. There were 94. We had also another job fair in October for Fullerton Community Center. There were 94 organizations there, 325 job seekers. So it was a well-attended event as well. We provided reports on just the number of people, the type of employers that were there. So I think that's kind of high level, the updates that they would have talked about in the business service, our business solutions committee.
John, did you have a question?
I didn't, no.
Oh, okay, got it. How many months away do you think we are from bringing on board the new business services manager?
That's a tricky question. It took Orange County like 7 months to hire me for my interviews. So I literally don't know. I do know that candidates have to go through background checks and screenings and things like that. I know that just because they offer you a job, it doesn't happen immediately. We do currently have Elizabeth in the position. So she's been providing business services, but if I'm being honest, that department needs at least three other people working from it. So that's just hiring a manager. You still have to hire all the staff that go in that department. So I think that it's going to be a while before we're fully up and running. I will share with you for the Business Solutions Committee, I went out to Cal State Fullerton to talk to the students in their business department where I don't know if you guys know this, but they have students that actually provide support to businesses in the community at no cost. So they'll help them with like marketing, business planning, just various different things. So I'm exploring, trying to figure out, does it make sense for us to work with them and outsource some of our work to them so that we can serve the community better? I'm not really sure. I'm still engaging in conversations with them, but I am exploring every opportunity I can to figure out how to fix the gaps that we have in our business services. Mm. Yeah, so more to come on that. I don't know. So even if we hire the manager, we still don't have the staff. And as a reminder, we haven't talked about this, but you'll see that in the financials, we had to return rapid response and layup aversion money because we're short staff in business services. So mm-hmm. the more we're returning of that, the less money I'll have to provide business services. So it's an issue not to have the staff that we need because we can't provide the service that we're required to.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Any questions regarding the business services report or committee? Okay.
I don't think so.
All right. All right, thank you. So moving on to the youth committee.
Yeah, so the youth committee met. We had a good meeting. Obviously, we went over a couple of those action items that we just reviewed. We also had a couple of great youth stories, and it's always fun to hear from the youth that are at the sites. Then we also went over the performance reports. I guess one of the difficult things is looking at some of these performance reports is that they're really not current. So we're looking at Q2, but you look at year-to-date expenditures and they're the same as the Q2 actual quarter numbers. And so they're actually just the first month or they're actually Q1 numbers. We don't actually have Q2 numbers. So it's really hard to kind of look at the numbers when they're not current. So that was one thing we kind of looked at, and I guess it's a matter of just the timing from the city of La Habra and getting it through the approval process and all of that. But their performance is kind of still slow. It's better than it was a quarter or two ago, but it's just been, I think, slow going, kind of getting the youth into the program and getting them through the, you know, the different stages. I don't know, Karma, do you want to add anything to that? Or
so I think you covered it all. What I do want to share with this the executive committee, the same thing we talked about in the one-stop committee, I've already started engaging with a third party to develop training for our service providers because there's a gap. So if we're focusing on business services and they don't have that responsibility and all you have to focus on is recruitment, engagement, and enrollment, I think that we're missing some opportunities. So I know that typically I would not encourage training service providers because when they apply with the RP process, they say that I have the staff that's knowledgeable and experienced in delivering services. This is why I should win, right? And we're usually awarding them based off of what they say they can do. But what we've seen is our numbers are dismal. So, and there are a lot of people in Orange County that are eligible for our program. If there are over 3 million people in Orange County and there's like a 3-4% unemployment rate, that's about 30 to 40,000 people that should be utilizing our workforce system. And we're not even nowhere near that, right? And so what I did is I reached out to Angela Gardner to get a quote from her. I'm going to have staff reach out to two other organizations to try to get a quote from them to develop training, engagement training, because I think that there's something about the customer experience that might be missing. So more to come on that, but my goal is to let's see if we train them if it's a better outcome. And so my desire is to have that training put in place by March so that we can try to make the best of this rest of this contract year because their performance is our performance. And I'm concerned that we will not make our performance for this year.
Yeah.
So,
that's a good idea.
You know, and I know that we have to be careful with walking that fine line of, you know, outreach versus promotion and, you know, marketing. But some of the strategies, and, you know, maybe it has to do with how these other workforce development boards are structured. I am seeing some of the testimonials of the participants get out there. You know, they show them at the committee meetings the board meetings, and somehow they make it onto social media. So is that an opportunity for us?
Funny you should say that, because Deola did a whole training on using social media. So okay. Yes, it is an opportunity for us. I think my parameters is the county, so whatever the county rules are. But DOL, like I said, funny you should say that. Last week, DOL did an entire presentation on using social media, how to, like, the difference between advertising and outreach, and how do you use it, using a third party to help you. We did hire a third party company to help us with social media posting. I think we need to do more of it. I don't know that it necessarily needs to be a staff member. Maybe it needs to be an outside agency that helps us. That's what they do. They focus on engagement on social media and on those platforms to raise the level of access to the community, right? So funny you should say that. You're absolutely right. I think that the parameters I might have is maybe the county's policies, because they do have policies on what social media sites you can use and things like that. So I'll have to start exploring, you know, with the county's PIO. But you're right, workforce development boards are allowed to do it. A lot of them, I think that when they're a nonprofit, don't have kind of those barriers that they do with municipalities. And so that might be why it seems different for San Diego, because they do a lot of it, versus us, because we're under a municipality structure. Mm-hmm. So the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. And you're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Just opportunity that we have to really elevate the programs that we have to offer here. So, okay. Any questions regarding the youth committee report? Okay. Great. Moving on to the One Stop Oversight Committee.
Good morning. So for the One Stop, we are always time challenged, I'll say that. We get bogged down in the performance reports, and then we kind of and we talked about this, and then we kind of have to zip through the rest of the agenda. And we also talked about adding more stuff to the agenda. So we remain time challenged in that committee. We spend about 2 hours, and what happens is we get into the performance report, and it's the same story that we've been hearing now for a few years. And I'd say during the COVID time, we sort of wrote it off as COVID. But I don't think we can do that anymore. And so what we're seeing is, not all, but we are seeing a pattern of they're just underperforming. People are not coming into the One Stops. And sort of that theme we have been talking about as a group, really a need for more virtual support. And maybe that means we need to look for providers that are more adept at virtual and less the old style brick and mortar, everyone sitting in a classroom. But we definitely are seeing a pattern of people not coming in, and we're behind. I mean, the numbers are behind. We are not achieving the mission of what we're trying to achieve. But I will say there are some exceptions. The veterans area is always a good report. The grant area is good, but the traditional go into the One Stop and do all your stuff in there, it seems last century, and we're at 2023, and I don't think we have adjusted to keep up. Coming out of COVID, people are not, they're not all coming back. And so we talked about maybe, should we make more virtual opportunities partnering with the public libraries, maybe more of the mobile units? But I think it's been enough time that we've seen this, and we can't say it's COVID anymore, that we need to start to address this, because if we just keep going this way, we're going to keep getting the same results. And it's a little concerning as we keep opening more brick and mortar. So we're going in one direction of opening more brick and mortar, and we're seeing less people coming in them. And yet any attempts to do virtual are well embraced. I mean, people are just jumping at these virtual options. So I think maybe we need to step back and look at where that's going. And then I'll turn it over to Karma, see what she wants to add.
No, I think you did a great job covering it. Yeah, so same thing. We're going to try to hire that third party to help us with training. When we get ready to procure, perhaps maybe that needs to be in the procurement so we can explore that as a board. Do we want to put out a procurement for services offered plus virtual, if I'm being honest. Career teams had that platform that they offered virtual support to participants, right? I'm not sure what's missing though. We have not been able to secure our LMS. I think you guys have known for the last 3, maybe 4 years, I have been saying we need an LMS and I've been trying to get it. I haven't been able to get it for many reasons. So I don't know that it's going to be an LMS system that we deliver or that we create on our own, or if it's going to be like Barbara said, finding somebody who already has a platform and just using their platform to serve our customers. I don't know. I haven't been successful through the county to buy our own. So I'm not really sure what to do, but I will, in future one subcommittee meetings, we'll talk about it and we'll develop a procurement based off of what the committee decides in terms of what they want that next contract to look like.
Yeah.
And to be clear, what are we hearing directly from the service providers on why they're not meeting their numbers?
Well, one of the biggest things is EDD. So in the past, EDD's UI used to be in the one-stop center. So in order for you to get UI insurance or support, you had to go into the one-stop center. Well, EDD is not back in there anymore, right? And on average, they were saying about 230 people a month, right? Well, that's big, right? So 230 people a month coming into the one-stop center that are not coming in anymore. So that's one of the issues, is that they're just not, EDD is not there anymore. And we were gleaning from the customers that they were serving, right? They've gone virtual, right? So they're not serving them face-to-face anymore. They kind of put everything online, which now that means our numbers are significantly lower. And then our partners. So a lot of our partners have changed the way they provide services. They're providing a mix of virtual versus on-site. So they're not getting the numbers of people coming in. So one of the interesting things about one-stop centers is it's one of those things. And number one, you don't come to it unless this is your last resort. Like most people don't think to come to us first. They don't think I lost my job, let me go there first. They think, let me try this on my own. And after I've exhausted all of my resources, then I'll try to go to a one-stop center. So that's the other thing, is that we're not branded to be the first stop. We're kind of the last resort, right? And so that's been a challenge for us. So I think it's a combination of many things, that number one, we've learned how to operate using technology. Like if I could go to the welfare office and do everything I needed to do in the welfare office virtually, which is what's happening in most states, why would I go into a one-stop office to get a job when clearly you can do all of those services online, right? Even the education system, so colleges, like they've moved from the classrooms to more virtual. So I think Barbara is right about balance. Now the law says that we have to have one comprehensive center. That's all it requires that we have as a workforce system. So we could go to a model of having one comprehensive center and then virtual services.
Currently, more mobile units. We're all for the mobile units. The mobile units are very popular. You could bring them into areas for specific events. The other issue, and it's concerning, and we've seen a pattern of this, is the invoice, the inaccuracy and the rejection of invoices. It just keeps happening where these providers turn in invoices that are unacceptable, and it costs administrative time to the folks that have to process them and turn them back. It's just not professional. And I think in our environment, and you look for our input from industry, you know, we wouldn't be in a rush to pay them if that's what they're turning in. It's on them to fix their invoices, make them accurate, turn them in properly.
Is our strategy regarding these service providers and the issues that, you know, we are seeing from them, are we just having one-on-one conversations with them regarding corrective action needed? Because, you know, I'm wondering if it might be helpful to convene all of them together, have some sort of convening, and so that we can have a conversation and send them all the same message, the same message regarding. You know, I don't want this to seem like it's mean spirited or anything like this. Like you got to do this, you know. So we want it to be, a nice event, but we want to send a strong message on what's required of them, what we need from them. And they're all receiving the same message across the board. And so you can walk away from this and say, we didn't tell you.
Well, and I don't think it's arbitrary. It should be called out in the contract, what's required in your invoice.
Right.
So two things. Number one is called on the contract. We even give you a guide. Two, we did one-on-one training. So we offered virtual training. We recorded it. We asked you to come, like all of them to put together, come to this, learn how this invoice is supposed to work. Then I offered one-on-one, like the city of La Habra, I offered to sit down with them, go through an invoice with them to help them. They didn't take me up on the offer. So it's only so much I can do. Now I have not offered it to career teams. I have not offered that to them yet. And I will definitely offer that to them. I think that sometimes people get used to doing something one way so long that they really can't, they don't do well with the change. I know that it's my understanding La Habra went to Anaheim to question Anaheim about my policy, and Anaheim said, no, she's absolutely right. So I think that there was a struggle with La Habra about the change that I made, that they didn't believe that that's how it's supposed to work. But Anaheim said, no, she's right. That is exactly how it's supposed to work. You are required to put in.
We need to step it up.
Yeah, basically you're required to do what she said. Like, she's right. And so I think after hearing that, that should have been their cue that, okay, Karma's right. She's not wrong. Let me go fix it. But it still hasn't quite happened. And maybe it's their policies and procedures, because they are a municipality, that maybe it's they need to learn how to, if they're going to go after the WEO grant, comply with the WEO grant. I don't understand why they're 3 months behind. Now, I can understand if they were 1 month behind, but they're three. So yeah. I literally don't get that. I can understand one, like maybe you couldn't get that last one in December's in enough time, but it's February right now.
It's a pattern. This isn't a one-off.
Yeah. Okay. So do you think that there might be some value in bringing them all together to send them the same message regarding what we are experiencing, and we need their help to address these areas of concern?
I will do it again. So I have to do it online because I can't take them away from the centers.
Okay.
But I will do it. I will do it online. If you want me to, I will do it online. I will offer to do one big virtual training where I ask them to come again. And then I will offer them one-on-one sessions where I go through your accounting with you to help you do this, because I want you to win. I want you to do well. And it doesn't do me any good with you submitting late invoices, because it basically it gets in the way of me reallocating money. Because I won't know how much money we have to give back if you're sending all these invoices in late. Like, I can't be proactive. But I will absolutely offer a training session on invoicing again. I will also send them the policy, like the information again, because we did do that. And then I will also offer one-on-one sessions with them should they need it.
Okay. And the policy states that if a service provider fails to comply with the requirements of the Workforce Development Board of the county, however it's written, what are the consequences?
Good question. So what happens is we give you a corrective action plan, right? And if we can't resolve it with the corrective action plan, then I take it up to my board and my board decides, because it is your decision to continue with these service providers or not. You can say to me, hey, Karma, we as a board have decided that we no longer want to work with the service provider. You need to go out and re-procure today, right? But it goes up to the board. So the policy is that whenever there is an issue with the service provider and it's a continuous issue, that it goes in front of this board, and this board ultimately makes a decision of what happens. I will resend you guys that policy so you guys can see what it says, what happens when service providers fail to comply and we consistently have issues with them.
Right. And this is standard language contained in all the service providers' contracts, right?
I believe it's in the contracts, but I also know there's a policy.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I don't know, Barbara and John, what are your thoughts about making one more attempt to bring all of the service providers together? I'm thinking the board should be present at this next meeting, just to support Karma and her message, and to really underscore the importance of these service providers complying with, staying within their contract, in terms of the requirements there. So what are your thoughts there?
Well, I don't know that the board needs to be present. I mean, Karma has the authority to do what she needs to do. I mean, I know you can put them on warning. We've talked about that in the past.
We have a hard enough time getting a quorum for a board. Nonetheless, doing this, I think maybe a strong letter to all of them. I mean, this is a contractual requirement.
Right.
Okay.
you know, the city of La Habra, like you said, they're another government entity. And I mean, they're like most government entities, you know, the service providers may be doing all they can. They may be doing a good job in a lot of respects. And then they hand off this to the business office and don't have any kind of say or, so I don't know.
But somebody needs to own it on their
own. Yeah.
Because they're not getting paid. And then our numbers were off schedule. It's just,
right. Yeah, I agree.
There are 9 lean principles. Everyone should know them. Lean is not just a manufacturing.
I'm not sure that is.
Who's talking?
Not me.
Not me. I don't know what that is.
I think it's gone now. Whoever, yeah. They muted themselves, so.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the way that we've handled it in the past was just to send the kind of the warning letter and to kind of let them know we're serious. And then hopefully there's some compliance from that point when they know that they're potentially kind of getting called out on the carpet.
I think I'd go through our regular, you know, subcontractor process.
Right. I mean, you can always agendize it at the board meeting and ask for a specific update from each of the entities that are behind and ask for a progress report as to what they're doing to fix it and when they will be caught up, just to kind of put them on the record as to why.
But John, we do. So the thing is, we write corrective action letters. So when service providers don't turn in invoices on time, my staff has been instructed to write them a corrective action letter and say that you are out of compliance with the terms and conditions of your contract. You are required to give us a corrective action letter on how you plan on fixing this to resolve this matter as soon as possible. So it's not like we don't, and it's documented, right? And so they're required to respond back within 30 days with whatever they're going to do to fix it, right? So they've gone through this process last contract year, and right now, Maggie's sending out a letter to them to say, hey, you're not in compliance. I think that there's this corrective action process that you go through in terms of writing them a letter, telling them to fix it, give them the opportunity to fix it. And then if there's no proof of fixing it, then it needs to escalate.
Right.
You need to put some teeth behind it.
Correct. Because right now it's just passing letters back and forth.
Yeah.
Right. I know Barbara's time is short, so... Anything else we need to discuss before she needs to drop off?
No, we discussed the grant matrix and I went over the sub-grant agreements, okay. Trying to figure out a way to disclose the finances because this board is supposed to have full preview of everything, right? And so my first step was to provide you guys a copy of the sub-grant agreement so you can see the money that's coming in, kind of how it's happening. I am trying to work with the county's accounting department to give you guys income statements and balance sheets that you're accustomed to seeing so that you have a better visual of where the money's going, how it's being spent, so you can do more oversight because this board is responsible for oversight of the dollars. And so hopefully they can give us something. If not, then I'm going to have to buy grant management software where you can actually see this because right now what I have for budget sheets, I honestly can't even follow it. It's odd. And so I'm looking for them to provide it to us. If they can't provide it to us, then I'll go out and buy it. Okay. Because this board needs to be able to see the money, like where it's all going. And then the last is the EDD compliance. I just gave you guys an update of where we are with some of those compliance issues. The ones from 16, 17 still outstanding. No additional updates. I just want to make sure that you guys stay well informed of where we are with audits.
Okay. And one more thing, moving on to the discussion items, open discussion. Anything you want to share, Karma, regarding the status of the MOU?
Oh, we haven't talked about it, but we have to develop an MOU as a workforce board. And the MOU is supposed to be this workforce board and the board of supervisors, how you work together. There's not one. So I think that that's created a lot of confusion between this board and the county over the last several years, because it's, where the law says that this board is one thing, the county has a different perception, and you guys aren't even meeting with the board of supervisors. So I have to develop, I got a nudging from DOL and from the state that, hey, Karma, you guys don't have an MOU agreement and you're supposed to. So we will have to develop an MOU agreement that talks about how this board communicates with the Board of Supervisors and the actual job of this board, which is in alignment with the law. Because right now this board, for a while there, I think you guys were under the impression you were a rubber stamp board, that you guys weren't, you were just an advisory board. And that is not at all what the law says. This board has a lot more oversight requirements than I think may have been led to believe in the past. And so this MOU agreement will make it very clear, but then also offer you guys the opportunity to connect with the Board of Supervisors like you're supposed to make decisions for this workforce system.
Right. All right. Any questions regarding the MOU?
I don't think so. Okay. So are we at that place? When is the Board of Supervisors meeting to discuss the ability to add board members and vote on board members, new board members?
So they just passed this bylaw, but I think, if I'm being honest with you, I think this board needs to understand their roles and responsibilities and not hear from me. So I'm going to encourage CWA to do a training session. I'm not encouraging, they're going to do it.
Right.
To this board, so you guys fully understand what your role is, because I think over time, it's been diluted what your role is, so that we can write this agreement together. Because right now there's just this disconnect with what you guys are, and you don't even talk to the Board of Supervisors and you're supposed to, according to the law.
No, we right. never do.
I know you're supposed to though.
So I think the MOU is necessary. It would be good guidance on our—
So the first step, so the first step is on March that CW is gonna provide training of the role of the workforce board. So it's very clear from the law, what does it say? And then once you guys are fully aware of what the law actually says you're supposed to do, then we work together to develop this MOU agreement between the Orange County Workforce Development Board and the Board of Supervisors.
Right. And we have that meeting scheduled for March 21st.
Correct.
In Irvine. So hopefully you both of you have that on your calendar, the mandatory meeting. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I think we've covered everything. Any final questions before we conclude? Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you all, everyone.
Thank you.
We will talk again soon.
Thank you.
All right. Okay.